til Personvernpodden, en podcast av Datatilsynet.
Hun startet en tenketank for dataetikk, da begrepet nærmest var et fremmedord. Nå er det på alle sine lepper, og EU foreslår at medlemslandene oppretter sandkassa for ansvarlig kunstig intelligens. Gjest i denne episoden av Personvernpodden Gry Hasselbalk. Jeg heter Kari Løymann. Jeg jobber i Datatilsynet som prosjektleder for Sandkassa for ansvarlig kunstig intelligens, der vi hjelper virksomheter til å utvikle og bruke personvernvennlig KI. Vi er så smått i gang med våre fire første Sandkassa-prosjekt, men i denne episoden skal vi ta et steg tilbake og se på hvorfor vi i det hele tatt skal stimulere til innovasjon og utvikling av personvernvennlig kunstig intelligens. Hun som skal forklare oss det her står bak den danskbaserte tenketanken Data Ethics, og hun har vært del av EUs High Level Expert Group on AI, og hun nyslått doktor i dataetikk. Og selv om dagens gjest dansk, så tar vi praten på engelsk. Og det ikke fordi vi ikke forstår dansk, men det fordi vi også skal legge ut denne podcasten i en serie mot et internasjonalt publikum. Dr. Gry Hasselbalk, PhD of Ethical Data. How do you like your new title?
I enjoy it, but I mean, I feel like that I got more of a certification from the work I did outside. So you could say I'm kind of a PhD now certified, but I think very much we have to appreciate the experiences we get outside these kind of academic contexts.
That's true, but congratulations with your new PhD degree. You had your dissertation just, I think, last week or the week before. And so we can truly say that you are an expert in the field of data ethics. And that leads me to the first question, which is quite basic, but still quite important for us non-experts in the field. And that is, what is data ethics or ethical use of data, and why is it so important?
If you looked at the title of my PhD is called Data Ethics of Power. And it's very much based on you could say the first of all the last 20 close to 20 years that I've been working in the field, where I've looked at a kind of transformation of the debate on, first we were considering our privacy in terms of how it was challenged by new systems that were processing and collecting our data. And then we started also seeing different kind of challenges in terms of more the power relations and the power dynamics that were reinforced or were getting a different kind of reality from these new data systems. So the way I look at data ethics is that it's basically our little challenge towards particular power dynamics that might not always be beneficial for the individual human being or in general what we call our democratic societies and these kind of power balances that our democratic societies are based on. So this is kind of my definition of what data ethics should do and what it's for.
So it's about the power relations, and you say that it has changed in the past 20 years. How has it changed?
Well, yeah, as I said before, I've worked in terms of new emerging technologies and citizen empowerment and these things for many, many years. I used to work with children and young people and their protection and empowerment online. And many of these debates about, you know, for example, their rights, both to freedom of expression, but also to privacy, were very present in the very early debates in general, you know, in terms of how do we create these new technologies and how are data used and how is it accessed and so on and so forth. And then, of course, I continued working with this field in the sense that the first debates we had were very much based on this idea that we had to give citizens competences to protect themselves from these new digital technologies. we had to kind of protect ourselves from big companies or states that would go through our data or follow what we do and challenge our privacy. And the reason why I kind of changed and actually stopped working with this topic was that I realized that actually it's not only the users that have to change, it's not only the citizens. We have something that is fundamentally wrong in the basic infrastructure, in the way in which data is processed and the way it's handled by some very powerful interests. And so I think probably I'm not the only one who had those thoughts at that time. That was around the 2010s when the GDPR came out, you know, the General Data Protection Regulation. I don't have to explain what that is in this context, I'm sure. But I mean, in general, we were seeing that we had citizens. If we looked at surveys, you could see citizens were starting to be very concerned about the use of their data. And this kind of very invisible effect it would have sometimes on their agency and their opportunities. And then we had the legal aspect, as I said, the GDPR that came out, which was a kind of symptom of a change also in the policy environment, where policymakers were starting to understand the power of data, not just as something where someone gets access to someone's data and we challenge our privacy, but as I said before, something that fundamentally can shape our democracies and also challenge the powers and the sovereignty, for example, of states and regions. And so we started having, that was the very early time, we started having regulations. Companies, something that I worked with very much when I left this youth online empowerment and protection field and started working with a Danish journalist called Pernille Tranberg. We decided that maybe we should focus on the companies, the ones that builds the data technologies, and see, you know, are they also changing the practices? And we actually saw, we wrote a book about it called Data Ethics, A New Competitive Advantage. But while we were doing our research for this book, we saw that there was actually also companies that were changing their practices, that were actually realizing that, you know, big data, just to collect every piece of data we can and do whatever we want with it for profits or for efficiency of services, was actually something that somehow would bite you in the end later on, because consumers or your customers or even the legal sphere would either come up with requirements or your customers would not trust you anymore. And so you saw a lot of companies, especially we saw them in Europe, that were, for example, when the GDPR came out, there were some of those we talked with who said, well, we don't really have to change our practices because we're already doing this. We're kind of considering data ethics as a part of our innovation process, as a market, they started using it as a marketing strategy, but also as something that was just part of their innovation. You know, I remember, for example, a toy maker that was making an internet connected doll. This was a European toy maker, and I knew that, for example, their toys, they didn't have, for example, a microphone like we remember. And I know that in Norway you're very aware of this Kayla doll that kind of is very unsafe in terms of data protection, not a very good thing. I think in Germany it was even deemed a spy device. But this, and this was a German developer, made this internet connected doll without a microphone. And when I asked him, so why did you do that? And what kind of considerations, what is privacy by design to you? And he was like, well, I mean, it was just a natural thing because I was thinking about my privacy aware customers. And so for that thing, you know, you can see that the debate was like slowly moving towards the more, you know, not just, you know, how can we comply with a data protection law, but how can we kind of make it part of our innovation process? How can we build trustworthy relations? How can we create democratic societies? And that's kind of where we have the debate right now. This was a very long story, so leading to one broader point.
But what's the status now? Are most companies aware of this? Is data ethics the central part of business development now? Like, what's the status?
Well, I think any big company will have to consider have data ethical considerations. I mean, generally, the entire environment, the entire ecosystem of big companies, and also the requirements from investors and things, are very aware of the ethical challenges of not being aware of risks and not managing your data in proper ways. So I think that generally most companies are aware of it. A lot of companies are also struggling to understand what does it mean to not just comply with the law, but to actually respect the values of the law. Mm. So in terms of if you want to, for example, create a service where you use or you have to do something with personal data and where you have customers that add that personal data, you know, how do you create a technical infrastructure where, for example, you kind of turn this power relation around a little bit, where it's not just you that can kind of use the data to make your services better or to market towards your micro market towards your customers, but that you're customers, for example, can get access to their own data. They can even correct it and they can understand how their data is used. They can also withdraw data. Some of these things are legal requirements, but other things are also very much about an understanding how we create infrastructures where there's kind of a shared benefit sharing, which is not very shared, at least now, but should be. But also just that generally that it's trustworthy, no?
Mm. Yeah, I think trust is a key word here. But is there a risk that companies use data ethics or like ethical AI as a type of greenwash, as a pretty word to describe the product, but it's not actual ethical? Like how can users or consumers distinguish between products and services and how ethical they are?
Mm. Yeah, well, data ethics is not only about power, it also is power, which I think is a really important point here. So not only companies, but all kinds of, and I see it very often. I mean, when we came up with the title for our book, no one actually thought it was a very good title, Data Ethics, because no one understood it. And they would say, oh, that's not enough. You know, there's no economy in it. No companies would care about it. And generally, no one would understand what it means. But today, it's like, it's a very popular term, and it's a kind of catch-all phrase. It's become everyone's declaration. Everyone can declare, because no one is actually... Because it's basically just a stamp that you declare that you want to do good, but that's of course not good enough, and so I think we are at a stage now where we do need to have a very clear definition of what we mean by this, and that's why I, for example, emphasize the idea that the powers that we create through and distribute through the data design and the services we make. Is incredibly important to focus on as a shared framework, because no one, if you use data ethics in this way, you cannot create a service, for example, where only you benefit and still call it data ethical. In terms of where we are for ordinary customers to understand what services to choose, it's still very difficult to understand. I mean, there's talks, as you said, in governments of making data ethics seals. We have that in Denmark. We are also, for example, in Denmark, there's a new requirement by law that that companies have to declare what they do in terms of data ethics in the annual reports, companies that had a certain size. And so we're slowly getting some of the tools that we also had with the green technologies, no? So different ways of reporting on how you use data, different ways of also creating trust with your customers. But definitely there's no way we can understand clearly now. One thing we could kind of consider is to look at where, for example, companies are based and what kind of, for example, cloud services they use for processing data. So anything that is within Europe, we would understand, does have to comply with the GDPR, for example.
Right. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the topics that we will explore in our sandbox, what ethical and responsible use of data actually means in practice. So the Data Protection Authority will work directly with the companies with specific AI use cases to explore what does this mean in practice. Do you have any tips for the work that we will do in the sandbox? For example, what areas need attention?
Yeah, I think one of the key challenges is kind of where we process our data and how, what kind of tools we use for it in AI. As I mentioned, the cloud services, most of the ones you use for AI, for example, and for the AI infrastructure, you know, the key ones, Azure and AWS and IBM and these kind of services. So the very infrastructure is very often drawing on, or at least the data is drawing on something that is a third party and external to maybe our interests. And I think that's something that should be explored, you know, what kind of even hardware and software in very concrete terms is used for processing data, and how does that challenge some of the things we want to do with data? And then, of course, I think one of the key things and that's more in terms of AI ethics in general, but one of the things that I promote within my, and that I have explored to create length, both in my policy work, but also in my PhD, is this human-centric approach, or what I call a human approach, which is basically not so much about, you know, focusing on the individual human being, but it's about, you know, how do we ensure that there's some kind of human, there's always a human responsibility and a form of accountability embedded in these systems. You can never extend the responsibility of X or agency to a system, that you'll always have ways to, for example, both for developers to look into a data process, or for the users to understand what is happening with their data. And when you look at the newly published AI regulation, there is kind of very much focus on this area. If you look through the high risk applications, for example, the key focus is one of the key focus is this kind of the invisibility of these systems, the systems where they are, for example, can manipulate without our knowledge, or where we are scored, or our human qualities are measured by AI systems and reduced by AI systems with no human intervention. So that's another thing. So one thing is the very software and hardware that we process data in, and where is it based, and how is it, how does it comply with the, not only with the legal frameworks, but also with the values that we have embedded in this. And the other side is this idea of not only human, yeah, I think human in command is probably the best term, but human meaningful involvement, as some would call it, no?
Mm. And this human meaningful involvement, the purpose is to make sure that the technology is used in a way that is beneficial for humans, I guess. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's part of it. Actually, it's not the entire thing. I think that's how it's interpreted sometimes. So because it relates back to our fundamental rights framework, that is very much based on the individual human being and the rights of the individual human beings in a democracy. But I would like to extend that analysis to consider more the responsibility of humans. So we keep we keep being responsible of the things that we build, the technologies we build, that we don't extend our, for example, ethical responsibility. If we build an AI technology that is biased, then it's our responsibility. It's also it's the developer's responsibility, but it's also the user's responsibility to understand that when we deal with these technologies, they're not just these neutral forms where we can get a fair information. It's actually it's a political item. It's a value-based item. We are interacting with values and politics when we interact with these. Mm-hmm. So it's more the idea of taking responsibility of what we are building, and in by doing that, then the human approach also become an approach that takes responsibility of our environment or animals or anything that is in the planet. But we take responsibility of the technologies that we're building.
There are so many levels to this. You have the individual, you have the companies, you have society. It's a complex picture. Mm-hmm. To what degree do you think that the average consumer is aware of data ethics in their encounters with new AI technology?
So I think generally we are at a level where the average person doesn't really realize very often we don't even realize that we're interacting with an AI or someone is processing our data. You know, it's so embedded in our everyday practices that we don't even, you know, when you don't feel it, when you don't encounter it, you don't consider it. But I think of course we've had over the last few years, we had some bigger public stories about, you know, surveillance scandals and data leaks and the way we're manipulated with things. And now we start having these kind of also popular documentaries on, you know, how can data be biased and how is it biased in our everyday life and how does social media manipulate us? So we're increasingly having, you know, more awareness of it, and it's getting more popular. And then on the other side, there's also this that people are having more and more experiences of, you know, being mistreated or suddenly losing an opportunity for some reason. Like the best example of this, that is a very famous example in the United States, is this man that comes home from work and then he's arrested by the police and he stays over a night at the police station and realizes that actually it's because there's a facial recognition system that has compared his image with that of a criminal. And the police haven't even questioned this match until the very end. He realizes, wow, there's a match. And of course, it's a match between, he's a black man himself and the criminal was also a black man. And of course, and so his experience is this thing, you think all black men look alike. So we all have, that's a good example of an individual experience, but we have all these experiences, every one of us increasingly, not that extreme, but on like little levels. So yes, we're starting to become more aware and we're starting to demand changes.
You mentioned the new EU proposal for regulating responsible AI. Do you think regulation is the best way to stimulate both innovation but also responsible use of AI? Is regulation the way to go?
I think it's part of the solution. I mean, one thing we have to emphasize, and that actually also the AI regulation is emphasizing, this thing that we have existing laws like the Fundamental Rights Framework, like the GDPR and many other laws that already apply, and the AI regulation doesn't replace those. So regulation is one aspect of what we could call, if we want a change in the way that our data technologies and data infrastructures and technologies in general are kind of part of our lives. But there's, I think it's really important that we're aware that any solution to a very complex problem in general also needs a very complex solution. So there's different aspects. So there's something that laws can do. Laws, they are spelling out and they've been negotiated and we agreed on some specific frameworks that can be transferred into practice in one way. But just to require that we build safe and trustworthy AI is not enough. We also need to change the way that we understand technologies and the way that the education of the ones that builds the technologies or even the users that are using them. We need a particular level of kind of AI literacy or data literacy in general that we can only get through, for example, education. Or other kind of cultural practices. And then there's the layer of, actually very basic economic terms is that, of course, you cannot create a startup that is completely innovative unless it actually has some kind of funding. So we do need an environment that that invests in these kind of solutions. So there's different layers. I think the best example is, for example, consider public procurement of AI, for example. So one thing is that you actually require that public procurers have to consider data ethics in when they procure an AI system. But I mean, first of all, there has to be data it's systems with data ethics to procure. It's not enough that you just have existing companies that has, oh, we have to require with that, we have to oblige to this and that rule. They actually have to actually also have the innovative environment to actually be able to bid for a public procurement like that. And on the other side, you have the public procurer that has to know what they have to ask for. Know, you know, what are the things that we consider, for example, if you consider an AI system as a neutral tool that just has to work, just has to be efficient, you don't even see that one system might be biased or have discriminatory effects, while the other one, it has been considered because you don't ask for it. So there's so many layers in this. So as you can see, it's not just the legal requirement cannot exist by itself, no?
No. And I guess all the different layers depends on each other. Regulation wouldn't happen if users weren't interested, and users or people can't change this complex system just by kind of demand, I think. So all parts need to work together.
And it's very much like, as you said before, it's the green movement all over again. Now you can see parallels in how that worked. There was all kinds of levels. At first we had the worry, we couldn't see the sky from pollution. Then we had scientists tracing pollution to cars. Then you had that started a lot of green tech innovation. Then you had the laws that were introduced and requiring things on companies, and you had the consumers and the people that were starting to ask something. And today, for example, we don't have the big cars we had in the 1970s. We have smaller cars and more environmentally friendly, not completely environmentally friendly, but more and probably even better. No?
So what do you think about the future of data ethics? Do you think it might be a bubble that will burst once the competition from countries that don't have the same safeguards becomes too big and it will kind of have to bend? Or do you think data ethics and the kind of human-centric direction will prevail and spread?
Well, I mean, data ethics is, as I said, also just before it's one aspect of a complex solution, again, as I said. So data ethics has a particular role in particular moments, and I see it very much as a role of a kind of critical negotiation and an understanding of where we're going and where did we come from, and what kind of power relations do we want to be embedded in the tools that we create. And I think as long as we have that, there's always a role for a conversation and a negotiation like that. But of course, it's all about, you know, if this kind of conversation gets occupied by specific interests that will promote their own priorities or even define the problems from the based on their agenda, then data ethics is threatened in many ways, or at least the ethical conversation and the actual critical conversation we should have is threatened. And so we really have to be very, very aware of what interests that guides this. But then again, now when we talk about the human-centric approach, I think, I mean, that's at least something that the EU is building and trying to differentiate themselves from big regions like, or also countries like the US and China that have different approaches to and different understandings of what AI should play in our lives. And I see it very much also recalled in UNESCO documents and the OECD in their documents on this. So the human-centric approach, you know, as long as we kind of understand what it means, what it actually means, then it still has a way to go.
Mm. Thank you very much, Gry. It feels like we just tapped a little bit into a very big and interesting topic. And if listeners want to learn more, they can read your book, which will be coming soon, I think. It's called The Data Ethics of Power, A Human Approach to Big Data and AI, which I also will be very curious to read. So thank you so much for participating in the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.